There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I've had a skateboarding intervention forced on me by my wife.
All right, and now I'm going to slide my finger into the slot that I've just made.
Rotherham's a lot greener than people give it credit for.
If I can touch people's ears with the pages of single track.
Ear orgasms.
That does sound like a sex thing.
Hi, everyone. It's Mark here. Now, just before we start this week's episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Oladance. If you're looking for earbuds while riding, Oladance wearable stereo are the ones you need. The unique open ear design of Oladance allows you to listen to your favourite music when riding, yet still hear your surroundings to keep you safe. Now, what interested me is that unlike bone conduction headphones, their open ear design and multi-support design means your ears will never get tired or fatigued, even after 2 hours or more of listening. They also don't interfere with your helmet and glasses when you're putting on all your gear. Plus, the dynamic driver the earbuds use is 3 times bigger than most headphones, which allows them to deliver superior sound. The 16 hours long-lasting battery can last for your whole day. Just visit oladance.com/STW and use the code STW30 to save 20% on your purchase. That's oladance.com, oladance.com/STW and the code STW30. Get yours now.
Hi, Single Track World podcast listeners. You join us for another episode. I'm Mark, and I'm joined in the virtual studio this week by...
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Charlie.
It's the first day back in the office. It's Tuesday, the 11th of April. We've had a massive, long, 4-day weekend, which has been fabulous. What did you get up to, Hannah?
I think I managed 5 loads of laundry, so that was quite an achievement.
Oh, we're doing that, are we?
Right. Yeah. No, I'd been away for the week before, so I came back. I spent the Friday driving home and breaking my car. I spent the Saturday doing all the laundry and unpacking the car, and I spent the Sunday... Oh, I did do some gardening. And then yesterday, in the rain, I took my car to the garage, which was actually a complete waste of time because it's not even worth spending money on. And I rode a bike, which was exciting, from the garage to the train station to Leeds, where I completely failed to purchase a dress to get married in.
Sounds like you had no option but to ride a bike.
Yeah, but it was actually a joyous... The bike riding, that was the one joyous experience of yesterday, because that was actually the first time I have ridden a bike under my own steam since February, because I'm only just allowed back on the bike now.
Did you get wet? It was... the weather was horrific at times yesterday.
Yeah, I raced the very large black cloud and avoided it. It was quite satisfying. Yeah, I got to the train station just as the first drops were falling.
I noticed that when you listed the highlights of your weekend, you didn't actually list buying a wedding dress.
I didn't buy a wedding dress. And it's not a wedding dress, it's a dress to get married in. But I did not buy one because they were all hideous. And there are no shops left on the high street. And clearly I don't know what suits me anymore because I ordered two things off the internet that make me look at least 10 years older and at least 10 stone heavier. So, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it's not good. I don't like shopping.
Who does? Charlie, what do you get up to this weekend?
I had a 5-day weekend, but I can't account for every day. It's my birthday on Thursday, so I had a leisurely, homely day, walking a dog and so on. I went out, nipped out for something to eat in Hebden and came home very late. And after that, Tanya, my partner, she's been given a
wife.
BMW.
Sorry, she's wife. Your wife.
Still kind of new. She's got her car's being fixed because a bus crashed into her. So her courtesy car's a M3. Is it M3? BMW? It's a sporty BMW. It's about 50,000 quid. So we thought we'd take the dogs out to the beach at Formby. Went to Formby, which is, it's not the same as Cornwall or Africa or other beaches, but it's not bad for up here.
Formby's got these statues in the sea, haven't they?
Yeah.
They've got those big metal people that look like they're sinking into quicksand.
Yeah. Once you've looked at one, you sort of like, you don't feel the need to look at the other 70 or so. It's nice, though.
It's a good beach to take a fat bike on.
Yeah. Wow. It's big and flat, and there's no sand dunes there. But further up the coast, there's some nice sand dunes. Occasionally you see fat bikers out there. And then what did I do? In the storms of yesterday, I took a off-road motorbike for almost 200 miles, sort of non-stop 8 hours, crashing through rivers and over moors. And I walk down the stairs today one step at a time. It's one of those. Finished myself off yesterday. But yeah.
Maybe I'm the only person here then who's actually done a proper mountain bike ride this weekend. So went out on Sunday on a bike without a motor. Yes. What, with my reputation? It was great. It was just like riding a bike on an e-bike, just going a bit slower. But it was just as much fun. It was great. Loved it. And then yesterday I went skateboarding and now I can't lift my right arm above 90 degrees. Because I did...
Well, don't do it then.
I know,
don't lift your arm. Problem solved.
Every week we have this conversation, Charlie, about how crazy and stupid it is for anybody over the age of 50 to think that they can go skateboarding. It's ridiculous. Everything hurts this morning. Yeah,
I've had a skateboarding intervention forced on me by my wife because we're off on a middle-aged, middle-class walking holiday, which would be lovely. It's in Italy. There'd be lots of wine and food, and so I'm not allowed to skateboard for the month leading up to it, just in case I break something, which is fairly likely.
Yes, but yeah. It's interesting because I guess riding mountain bikes over steep, ridiculous technical stuff didn't come into that formula whatsoever, which I think says everything about skateboarding, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sudden gusts of gravity. It's not a lack of skill. It's all of a sudden your nose is on the deck and I've no idea how that happened. So, yeah,
that's what happened to me yesterday. It was one of those moments where you don't so much have the sensation of falling as you have of the ground coming up to hit you in the face. But anyway, we are a mountain bike media organization, so we should probably get back to talking about that now. Hannah, you are off on a secret launch, aren't you? You're going today. You're off
well abroad. I'm very excited because I get to stay in an airport hotel rather than sleeping on an airport floor, and this has never happened to me before because the flight's quite early, so, and there's no public transport there in the morning. So yes, I'm going to spend the night in Manchester airport at the hotel.
Oh, the glamour.
So,
and you can't say where you're going, or what could you say? You should
be able
to say where you're
going. Italy. I'm going to Italy, which I have not been to the Italian mainland before, so I'm quite excited about that. And I am excited about the prospect of actually being able to ride mountain bikes again. I'm now cleared to ride. Well, I'm supposed to be riding gently. My physio would much prefer, however, she appreciates that might not be possible. So I'm going to try not to fall off.
Yeah,
and I am going to wear all the padded everythings.
Good.
But yeah, so, like I say, I did enjoy myself riding around on a bike, just, you know, wriggling along the road and the bike lanes and stuff yesterday. It was fun.
So just remind the listeners why it is that you have been recovering of late.
Because I failed to learn to snowboard. There's a pattern here, isn't there? 2 feet on one thing in a plane. Yeah.
Yes, there definitely is. No skateboarding, no snowboarding.
Should probably ban wakeboarding as well.
Yes. All that. I legendarily failed at wakeboarding once.
What about...
In Italy, as it happens, I think on Lake Como. And I just provided a rather effective anchor for the boat that I was in.
Can we ban ironboarding?
Ironboarding?
we don't do that in my house.
Who irons? Yeah, anyway. Right, let's move on then to what we've noticed was caught our eye this week. So each week, each of us comes to the mic with something that's caught their eye this week. So who wants to go first? Who's going to start this one off?
I want to go first.
Oh, right. Is this going to be the ASMR segment?
Maybe.
What does ASMR stand for?
I don't know, but it's that weird thing where you... I don't know.
It's a sex thing, isn't it?
Ear orgasms, isn't it? It's listening to things on...
So I assume by that sound, Hannah has a really big packet of onion rings, big packet of crisps.
Actually, Hannah, what have you got? Tell us what you got.
I've got a packet of onion rings downstairs. I forgot that.
Who leaves half a packet?
My son. Was a big bag. The latest issue of Single Track just dropped through the door as I was coming up the stairs. So I thought I'll open it live. I can do a live opening. You ready? Like a slowly or fast? That was actually pretty good.
I like that.
Outrageously good. Everyone's going to think that was a sound effect we dropped in. That is stunningly good.
All right, and now I'm going to slide my finger into the slot that I've just made and open it a bit with beer. That's the outer wrapping.
Autonomous sensory meridian response. That's what ASMR...
And what does that mean?
Okay. Right. Integral to the subjective experience of ASMR is a localized tingling sensation that may describe as similar to being gently touched, but which is stimulated by watching and listening to video media in the absence of any physical contact with another person. There you go.
That does sound like a sex thing.
It does, yeah. Doesn't it?
Let me see if I can touch people's ears with the pages of Single Track then.
Go on.
I think that sounds great. Have we improved the quality of the paper?
We've just improved the quality of the contents, Charlie. Brilliant. That's what quality content sounds like.
This is out actually today, isn't it? It's landing with subscribers today.
Well, yeah. I mean, this has come through my normal... I don't have special private post. This is normal post that it's come in, yeah? This is me seeing it for the first time.
Mine also turned up this morning, landed on the mat, so it should be there with all of our... If you are a subscriber out there, a print and digital subscriber, so that you're expecting this, if when you listen to this it hasn't turned up, don't worry. It does take a few more days than usual for post to arrive. So give it until next week, and then you might want to get in touch with Zoe if it hasn't turned up. There's always just a very small number that can get lost in the post. Hopefully you're not one of those and you've got your copy in front of you right now as you're listening to this. So also for the digital-only members, we actually have by now probably most of the articles will be online for you to have a look. And there's one in particular. And when it comes to what caught your eye this week, I tell you what caught my eye. One of the articles that's actually gone up online that's in this issue that's got so much bonus content because it's digital, it's crazy. And that is the Sleeping Outside article.
Oh, I had to get up at 7 o'clock this morning and put those stories out manually to make sure that they appeared on the website in the right place. So that I did that before breakfast.
Wow, that's commitment. But it's such a great article because it's the same article that's in the magazine, which is absolutely brilliant. The pictures are great. But then there's so much extra stuff that we've managed to cram in that we couldn't fit in the print issue that's online. So if you're a digital, well, all of our full members are digital, whether you get the print or just the digital, everybody gets digital. So go and check out that article online. And yeah, it's fantastic. It almost made me want to go and sleep outside. And since my wife knows my aversion to camping is so strong, that's no small feat of publishing miracles to make me want to go and camp outside. Charlie, what's caught your eye this week?
Exciting news from the world of road bikes.
Say what?
Road bikes are like normal bikes, but they go on the road. And just starting at the beginning from a mountain biker's perspective, the people who wear the Lycra skin suits, skinny tires and all of that, and almost no tech ends up in our world from that side of the fence. But there's an event yesterday, the Paris-Roubaix, or Paris-Roubaix, if you can't pronounce properly. It's started in 1896 and is a mixture of tarmac and cobble sections. So it's kind of like historic road racing in places. Yesterday, a couple of teams used a Bluetooth tire pressure, a variable tire pressure device, so they could play around with their tire pressure whilst riding. So tarmac, cobbles, cobbles, tarmac. Low pressure, high pressure, high pressure, low pressure. And so it's based around a big valve stem with hoses coming out of it, which looks a bit delicate, but I guess this is early stages. And the two hoses run from the valve stem down to the big blue hub, which is almost as big as a disc rotor. But I guess they only use 140 disc rotors on road bikes or something like that. And then you have a Bluetooth switch in the bars, and it pumps air in and out of your tyres. There's an airline tyre pressure sensor and all of that going on. And it's very, very, very reasonably priced, at 4,000 euros ago, which isn't.
So how much do you win? How much do you win if you win?
How much money do you win if you win the Paris-Roubaix?
Yeah.
It's up there with winning a stage of a Tour de France. It's big. It's a big deal, that race.
Well, it needs to be more than 4,000 euros to, if it makes the difference between you winning and losing, then it might be worth it. But
one of the guys riding this system, which is called, I should probably give you the name, almost one click away from that. It's called the Scope Atmos. One of the guy who won it last year used a Scope Atmos this year and didn't win. Or he podiumed last year and
he podiumed.
I can't remember. It's road racing. I don't know the stats.
Podiumed. No, this car. Oh, come on. Where's
is this a new verb?
You don't like podiumed.
He got on the podium. Podium is not a verb.
It can be now.
Yeah, but so many things get turned into verbs these days. It's ridiculous. Let's not add to the list with podiumed.
Okay, I'll make sure I don't do any verbing.
Yeah.
Is verbing allowed?
Are you? No. You verbed. I verbed again.
So this is 4,000 euros. That's 300 grams per wheel. And it must have applications in the mountain bike world. I can see it. Well, when you've got mixed terrain, it'd be brilliant.
Would it?
Yeah. Really? If you're racing and you want to be fast and you get to a road section, or then you just, whack up the pressure and you can zip along. And then when you get to the bumpy bits, you can go to off-road pressure. If you got to a sandy bit or a snow bit, you could go super low.
Oh, you lost me at racing.
Yeah.
So, so who will ban it first, the Three Peaks or the UCI?
Oh, good God, the UCI.
UCI.
Only because the organisers of the Three Peaks probably don't have internet, and so they won't actually see it until it's put into some local newspaper print.
So the UCI banned the RockShox Ruby? Or was it Rudy? I think it was Ruby. I think it was. It was a road fork based on the Mag 10.
Yes, the Rudy was the mountain bike fork. Yeah. The Ruby.
It was the old road fork. So that was something that was developed with the Paris-Roubaix in mind, and that was banned. Was that 30 years ago?
Answers a question I had in mind, which is why are they bothering taking the tire pressures up and down? Why don't you just put suspension on it? But yes, of course the UCI got that first.
Yeah, so I can't imagine this sticking around. And UCI will ban it soon.
Yeah, so will we see it in mountain biking? That's the big question. Will it cross over? Yeah. Who knows?
I wonder.
Who knows?
I'm worried about using sealant. If you're sacking air,
oh, you're just
back in and out.
Pulse. You're just going to fill your hub with sealant, aren't you, as
yeah.
you deflow.
You're going to jab the sealant will no point get to some expensive bit of tech and go, ah, yeah. you were a pump. Now you're just a 300-gram expensive bit of bike jewellery.
What it could be useful for is rather than the sort of general alteration up and down is just an on-the-go blast. So let's say you're racing downhill and or an enduro and you get a flat and then you push the button and it goes bang with
tops
a big like self-inflating thing and pops it back up again. That yeah. sounds like something that actually might be worth having.
Yeah,
but
you
possibly
burp
not
your
a, yeah.
Yeah.
You burp possibly your tire. It's not a puncture, you yeah. just suddenly just let out a lot of air.
So you're just pushing air in, you're not sucking yeah. sealant out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite an expensive piece of kit for that very rare occurrence, isn't it? But I can see that maybe. All right,
but you know, bikes. Some of those bikes are quite expensive bits of kit for that.
It's true.
those I don't know 8 or 10 down.
I'm less cynical now about it. Now I've actually had a discussion about it. Right. So the last thing I want to mention is the fact that all of our members out there, we've got a new feature for you, haven't we, Charlie? We just launched
yeah.
it over the weekend.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
We have so all single track members. So basically, if you received a magazine or a digital member, you get access to a whopping great selection of hundreds and hundreds of special discounts. These include dramatic pause because I'm scrolling. Garmin 40%, Camelback 20%, Gyro, Muckoff, Hiplock, Enduro 15%, Oakley 20%, Panaracer 30%. And also, beyond these useful cycling discounts, you'll find Argos, Marks & Spencer's, Audi, Tesco and Sainsbury's in there at a lower percentage. And so basically, if you're sat on the fence and thinking, oh, I'm not sure if single track membership at a very reasonable 45 quid a year is a bit much, well, you can save absolutely effing hundreds with your membership now. So you can get 3.8% off at many supermarkets. That adds up. I did the maths. That's a couple of hundred quid saved for me. And we're only a household of two plus a dog, but we do like steak and wine.
Posh food.
And so what you need to know is to access this, basically, if you go to the singletrackworld.com website, top right you'll find the member zone. Click on member zone. Halfway down the page there's a block called save. Click on that and then you'll find a link. You then put in your email and the magic system will send you a magic code which will be valid for an hour, and that will get you in and you'll be able to see all the amazing discounts.
So yeah, there's a couple of people are asking about why do we have to stick our email address in. That's because this is actually provided to us. This is a service that we are buying in for our full members at no cost to them. It's all part and parcel of the existing subscription. In order to make sure that it's just our full members that can benefit from it, then their system has to do a check with our system to make sure that you are a proper, fully paid up member. And so that's why you have to stick an email address in there. But it's really, really quick. I mean, I did it, and the link that they email back to you to get into the system is so quick that it's no time at all. But yes, so this is actually a system. And I think the people behind this system are also the people who provide discounts. If there's anybody out there working for an emergency services or the NHS, you might be familiar with the Blue Light discount scheme. And I think the company behind that is also behind this. So it's a great new addition at no cost to you members, and we hope you make the most of it.
Oh, I forgot to mention Oakley. You also get Oakley in there, 20% off Oakley.
Do they have any money off really cheap cars on Auto Trader?
Halfords. The Halfords are in there.
Yeah, I've used all possible repairing things from Halfords already.
Maybe you should just polish it and sell it. Make it shiny and sell it.
You've got a cargo bike. What more do you need? Surely. Right, finally this week, we actually have... last week, we launched our new series, which is cunningly called Desert Island Disc Breaks, which is where we interview some personality or notable person from the bike industry and ask them a whole bunch of questions that some people may be familiar with if you're like us and you're avid Radio 4 listeners. Or is that just me? It's probably just me, isn't it?
I've kind of moved to Radio 6, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess 6 Music, yeah.
Clinging
anyway,
on to my youth.
So last week we interviewed Nick Craig. And when I say we, it was Hannah, who's here with us today. And Hannah, you have interviewed somebody else this week. So do you want to tell us about it before we lead into that interview?
Sure. So it's Chris Maloney this week, who people will probably know as Keeper of the Peak, as a Twitter account. And he's also now the chair of the Peak District MTB. So he does loads of advocacy work for mountain bikers, and he gets quite wound up about access law and that kind of thing. So it was quite hard. Like, when I asked him one question, then he'd answer all the rest of them in his answer. So he's a man with a lot to say. So the Desert Island Disc Brakes bit is just one little bit, and then I've got a longer interview with him to come, probably in the magazine a bit later in the year. So Desert Island Disc Brakes is a teaser of his life in bikes rather than all the advocacy stuff. Hello and welcome to another edition of Desert Island Disc Brakes. And today we're joined by Chris Maloney. Hi, Chris.
Hello. How are you doing?
All right, yeah. Now then, for those that don't realise, this is a complete shameless rip-off of the famous radio show. And so you're going to be washed up on a desert island where you'll spend the rest of your days alone, apart from the company of a single bike. Will they have a helmet and probably some pads as well, depending on how rad you're going to get, a toolkit and some trail building tools.
Excellent.
How does the prospect of being washed up on a desert island alone with no means of communication appeal to someone who works in communications?
It sounds like absolute heaven. It sounds like an ideal place. I work in communications, and it's a very, very busy job, but I've also got 3 kids and do all the volunteer stuff I do. So to be able to just be completely cut off for that for ages. My wife won't listen to this, so it's okay. That would be a lovely break for an extended period of time, I think.
Well, we've just had a hint at how busy your life is now, but let's go all the way back to the beginning. And so, when did you learn to ride, and what was your first bike?
As always, you kind of, do you think back to my dad pushing me along on the road somewhere and things. But I go back to the earliest bike memory I have. And this is in my grandparents' garden in the suburbs of Rotherham. And I don't know whose it was or where it came from. He must have got it from one of his friends somewhere. But there was a tiny little Rally Bluebird. Now, a Rally Bluebird was like a mini chopper. Mm-hmm. And it had a big black saddle on it with a little chrome back on it. And it was blue, obviously, with little raised cow horn bars on there. And I used to spend summer holidays blatting around that garden, up and down the garden path, which was a higgledy-piggledy path, which gave me, a very early taste of janky tracks and things like that.
Especially with that geometry.
Yeah, oh yeah, with like a 12-inch wheel on it and things. And what I remember really, really firmly from it is the cranks were knackered. And so it used to go clank, 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 clank when you were pedaling all the time. And yeah, so that was my earliest memory of riding a bike.
Okay. Well, so did you keep riding bikes all the way through childhood? Or did you have a teenage break or anything like that?
No. I carried on all the way through. So the minute I got out of school, I'd be back on the bike and then down to the woods. I don't know whether it was for the love of the riding that I did it all the way through my teenage years, or it was me justifying going and having a chocolate eclair from the bakers down the road. So I'd jump on my bike, go and earn a chocolate eclair, and then just trough terrible food before my mum came back from work and we got fed. But no, I just carried on. So I got that Rally burner, struggled to keep up with my older brother and his mates as they'd be off around the woods on their bike doing things. And I'd be there on a burner with like really long cranks trying to do what is now certainly mountain biking territory riding. but loving it, absolutely loving it. And then then got a mountain bike when I was 12, which I was far too small for, but perched on top. You know, when you see kids on a massively oversized bike, and I was perched on top of this thing. Room to grow into. Yeah, it'll grow into it. It'll be fine. And I did, thankfully. And that bike's still in my parents' garage, actually. But that really introduced me into mountain biking then, which I just fell in love with, absolutely fell in love with. And rode all the way through my teenage years, week in, week out, here, there, and everywhere, until I started driving. And that just opened up everything else for me in the whole world of wider mountain biking. And made me realize I had a totally unsuitable mountain bike. So I thought, I will go and buy a far more suitable mountain bike. I'll go and buy something far better than this Rally Drake, and I think it was. And so I ended up on a 3-ton Saracen Roar, because I thought that was a good bike. And back then it really, really wasn't. So, but yeah, no, never gave up on the biking. Loved it. Absolutely loved it all my life.
So was that Saracen Roar the first bike you bought with your own money, or had there been one before that?
Yeah, that will have been the first bike I bought with my own money. And yeah, we bought that. And then what did I do? We got the train, me and a couple of my mates, took our bikes, and we went out to the middle of the Peak District. 16 years of age or something. We lived in Rotherham, so it wasn't easy to get out there. And it was a bit of an adventure when I was such a wet behind the ears youngster. Got into the middle of the Hope Valley and thought, we need some supplies from somewhere. And me thinking the only place you can buy supplies is a supermarket, we then proceeded to pedal from the middle of the Hope Valley to Bakewell, which is a long distance on the road, and then we started our ride. So before we'd even start the ride, we were worn out. But that bike then very, very quickly revealed itself to not be suitable in any way, shape or form for any of the kind of things that I wanted to do. Yeah, what did I do then? Start borrowing bikes here, there and everywhere. And then yeah, university came around and went out and got myself. What did I get then? I saved up and I bought myself a Specialized Rockhopper hardtail, which again, I still have. And okay. I've ridden twice this week.
Oh, very good.
20 odd years old. So yeah, I love that.
That was value bike. For money then.
It was value for money.
What was the first bike that you had stolen?
Oh, the first bike that I had stolen. How depressing a question is that? What was the first bike? It's just a given that being a mountain biker, you've had one stolen. The first bike I had stolen was a Lapierre Zesty 214, which was my dream bike that I'd saved up for and saved up for and saved up for. Begged, stolen, borrowed money from my parents as well to get this bike, which I bought secondhand actually, but it was quite a new one. Yeah, and then made the mistake one day of leaving it unlocked inside my house. I normally chained it to the radiators and things like that, and then somebody came in the back door, and the next morning it wasn't there. And the first I knew of it, I lived in a house in Hunter's Bar in Sheffield, immortalised in the Arctic Monkeys song, of course. And I am from Rotherham. You can look it up. And I came down, and my housemate was making breakfast, and she said, "Oh, what are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I live here." Funnily enough, she said, "No, your bike's not here. I thought you'd gone out biking." It's like, "What do you mean my bike's not here?" Thinking she was having a joke with me, and then the bike had just disappeared, never to be seen again.
Inside your own house, that's
inside
brutal.
My own house. Yeah, it wasn't pleasant, really. Wasn't pleasant, really. I've been on the end of like stereos being nicked and all those kind of things from my car. There was one period where my car was broken into three times over an 18-week period, once they'd given time for the stereo to be replaced by the insurance.
Okay.
But I don't know, there's something about the bike going that was really, really sad. Really sad. I was like, oh no, what do I do now? Because I'd saved up so much for it. Mm-hmm. And then went back to the old Rockhopper again.
and it was still there when you got back to the train station.
It was still there when I got back to the train station, but slightly grumpy with me. And late at night, and then I had to cycle back up from the station with my lights not working, which hadn't been charged because I was expecting a taxi. But anyway, enough of the problems of public transport in Sheffield.
So you mentioned riding in the woods as a kid,
yeah,
and on that inappropriate rally. Is that kind of your first memorable off-road riding, or is there another one that sticks?
Where I lived in Rotherham, we were lucky to have some really nice woodland just down the road, and I would go down there and it'd be in and out of the trees, rooty, bumpy stuff. And that then progressed to, if I hit that bump there, I get a little bit of air, and that's quite good fun. And I've never been very good. I'm still firmly wheels on the ground rider now. But yeah, it was just going out and riding around the local woods and then going, oh, we've got to these woods, let's ride a little bit further afield. And you'd ride a little bit further afield, then you'd realize there was a motocross track. It's like, oh, I can ride on that motocross track. So you go down the motocross track and things like that. And that was quite terrifying because obviously the tabletops you get on a motocross track are a little bit bigger for somebody on a little bike like mine than I was used to. But it just, I don't know, it just sowed a seed really of I can go here and then I can go a little bit further. And then I can go that little bit further, and then I can go that little bit further. And this was in that halcyon time in the 80s, 90s, when you got up in the morning and you went out to play until the sun went down, and all those kind of things, you know. And so I just ride and ride and ride and ride, and then just go further afield. And never any panic about me going missing or anything. I was just trusted to come back, you know.
Did you get sent out with like 10 pence in your pocket just in case you needed to use the phone booth?
No, because I was from a painfully middle-class family, I had one of those phone carts. You remember the little phone card you could buy that was loaded with a few things? But then you always had to find one of the green telephone boxes rather than a standard red one, and they were few and far between. But I'd just go out and explore the countryside of Rotherham. Which there is, right? No, I knew you were going to say that. Rotherham's a lot greener than people give it credit for. If you haven't been, I wouldn't say it's an exact... the most desirable mountain biking destination, but for somebody as I was going out and just wanting somewhere with some hills, which there are hills in Rotherham, some nice woods, nice greenery and stuff, it's a nice place to be. I mean, going down to Listerdale Woods and Wickersley Woods and down through the gorse, these are all places that are really memorable for me that mean nothing for anybody else. But now last weekend I went to see my parents, took my kids with them, and they're going, oh, this place is awesome. I'm like, yeah, I know. So that's nice.
Well, you're going to get to play God before you go to this island. So you can decide to take Rotherham there if you want.
No, you're right.
You get to choose and build your own island. So what kind of rock and soil and climate and vegetation are you going to have there?
Right. Some of those questions are really hard. The easy one was the weather. Because I whenever I think about mountain biking weather, an image pops into my head. And the image is of... a ride I was on some years ago with my friend Ed, and we were riding in the Howgills, and we'd been up from Sedbergh over the Calf, up, is it Bowderdale that way? You go right up and you go up and up and up and up. And if you haven't ridden there, I know you have, but if others haven't ridden there, go and ride there, because you get up on top of the hills around Sedbergh, and it's just this blanket of kind of brush green, isn't it? This beautiful grassy hills. But coming back down, we came back down the River Rothy, I think, back into Sedbergh. It's a big clockwise loop you do. And it was late spring, one of those warm spring days. There's some foliage on the trees. And I picture it in my head now. I can see it crystal clear now. Sunlight just getting through and dropping dapples of light onto a shaded bit of woodland as we came down under what I think were birch trees. As he crossed over a stream going on there, it was just beautiful. And just like pictured for good weather, that was it. So late spring, nice warmth, not too hot for riding. Rock, well, I mean, Keep of the Peak, all that kind of stuff. It's Peak District stuff, isn't it? Gritstone, stuff that you can go on at 45 degrees and stand still on, and you'll still not slip.
So you're only interested in the Dark Peak, not the White Peak, then?
No, because I was going to say that as well. I was going to say that. So I've got here Peak Gritstone ? Or Peak Limestone ? Because I was challenging myself with it, going, I love the gritstone because of the stuff you can do and the grip you get and the way it just really supports whatever you want to do on the bike. But I thought my favourite descent's Cavedale, and that's limestone all the way down. So I'm just contradicting myself. I don't know. I like all the riding out there. I don't like all the riding out there. I don't like the muddy stuff when you get grass all clagged up in your derailleur. Can I have both? Can I have gritstone and limestone?
I think you're completely mad for wanting any limestone anywhere near, but okay, you can have it.
It's great fun. Yeah, it's great fun. You've got to be prepared for a bit of movement on there. So it's not completely dry. There's a little bit of give in the soil, but not enough to chew it all up. Because as we know, chewing things up and gnawing and all that kind of stuff is ridiculously irresponsible.
Well, so here's another choice you're going to have to make, and it's maybe gets into some of what you spend some of your time doing, that you're going to get to choose whether you send a trail team ahead to build everything that you're ever going to be able to get to ride there, or you just get a blank slate, but you've got to build it yourself.
I'd send a trail team, but it would be for some very subtle foliage cutback. So cutting back a few things, maybe just a tiny bit of lawn mowing on some of the brambles that are creeping across. No, it's my island. No brambles on this island. There aren't any brambles. Yeah, they're gone. I don't have any brambles. Maybe just a trail team just to take back some of the, any of the spiky stuff that's around there that's going to get caught up in things. But I love the natural stuff. Really love the natural stuff. So yeah, I want it relatively pristine. Just the track that we'd carve out ourselves riding, I think, would be the thing. And I think about going riding up on, where did I go? I rode up in the White Mountains in Crete, and up there, while it was, there were waymarked trails that were part of one of the big European long distance trail routes and stuff, the walking routes. They allowed bikes on there. Nobody ever goes on them anyway. And they were planned and maintained trails, but so rarely maintained that they were almost natural anyway. And obviously it's a lot drier as well. So yeah, that kind of very, 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 very light touch trail maintenance thing. Knocking out a drain, that kind of stuff, you know.
Okay, so when it comes to what sort of trails you're going to have, it's not going to be like North Shore and sculpted jumps then, is it?
Oh, I'm terrified of North Shore. I'm terrified of North Shore now. And like I say, the getting my wheels about a foot off the ground from a tiny little kicker was about as far as I go. I've seen photos of me jumping. I've seen videos of me jumping. And I am I'm just like the dead sailor straight over. I'm just rigid on there. I remember once before Grenaside in Sheffield was built up and up and up and become what it is now, there was a little kicker on one of the runs with a slight gap jump, only about 4 or 5 feet and about 2 feet high kicker. It was nothing. It was pathetic. And I just thought, I'll just hit it as hard as I can. And I just went into orbit. So I flew off the top of this thing, then landed in a heap on the other side. And all I can remember, looking picture now, is the jagged felled pine trees all around, just like one of those medieval scenes that you see with people with the spikes waiting for the horses to chase them down and stuff. And I'm just dropping towards these things, rolled and rolled and rolled in a massive heap on the ground there. My friend came down behind me. He's like, oh, you're all right. You're all right. I was like, yeah, yeah, come on, let's go do it again. He goes, all right, you've got to get straight back up and do it again. I did, slowed down a bit, followed him through and landed it. But no, it's the sculpted stuff, the big jumps terrify me. And I've fallen off North Shore enough times to know how painful chicken wire can be.
So then your trails, are they going to be just like long XC trails? Are you going to have some enduro stuff thrown in? What are you going to have there?
There's going to be some enduro stuff thrown in there, I think, because I do like a little bit of a techie challenge. I do like some fun in there, all those kind of things. When you think about these things, you try and, if you've got a desert island that's yours, you're tempted to throw together all the kind of crown jewels of rides you've done in the past, aren't you? What's been the most perfect rides I've done? And then you kind of go, well, that's difficult, because were the perfect rides I've done in the past about the place I was riding or the kind of ride I was doing? Or for me, what are the memories that come back? And it's the people I was riding with. So when it's a desert island, that's where the challenge comes, because I can't take any people with me. So I think about these beautiful, long, had a great ride on Ulluk Pike. That was beautiful, riding down there up on the ridge line up there, and just riding with these beautiful views. Quite techie riding on there, coming down from Skiddaw and down that way there. And then I think about some of the stuff in the Long Mend. Again, I'm up on the hill near the gliding club and stuff, and riding along there, just enjoying the view and things. So my desert island would have some lovely long ridge line rides with some techie little ranger path style nadgery stuff in there as well to play with, I think. Mm-hmm. Those would be my trails.
Well, back to bikes then. And which bike do you wish you'd had, but you never actually owned it?
That's a difficult one. That is a difficult one. Because I've kind of just ridden the ones you ever wanted. my bike history, I've just bought the bike that's been available to me. I've not really chased after bikes. I mean, I ride the bike I have. you know, and just make the best of it, with the exception of that Zesty 214, which was, I'd seen this bike and I thought, that's a beautiful bike, I really, really want that one. Then I got it and I was disappointed, which can, it's like the worst thing ever. Just get your dream bike, you buy your dream bike and then it's not the dream you thought it would be. It was too flighty, it's too light and nimble. Like frisky's not the word. It wasn't solid enough a bike for what I do, which right. is a lot of time blatting through things. The Jekyll I've got now is much more of a burly bike for doing those kind of things. I do love some of the Kotics. I do love some of the Kotics, but I just can't justify getting one as yet. If Si listens to this, Si, I mean, by all means, not that I'd ever be. I'm sure he wants people who are more photogenic and can do better things on his bikes for sponsored riding. But yeah, some of the Kotics are just lovely looking bikes. So yeah, I could pick one from any of that little family, I think, really.
Well, you can continue to lust after that for now, then. Yeah. Well, he might be listening. You never know. You're going to have a lot of time on your hands on this island. So what skill are you going to try and learn?
Probably fire lighting. I've got to survive and cook. I could do loads of cooking, couldn't I? Fishing, maybe. I don't know. I've always wanted. This is really sad. This is really geeky, but you know, like whittling away at wood and stuff like that, just doing wood turning and all those kind of really crafty things, which would suggest to me that I'm just turning into my dad, basically, because he likes doing all those kind of things. And so, maybe a bit of that.
You're in good company because Nick Craig said stuff to do with wood. For the same question. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe there's something. Yeah, because I mean, you think about that, and you could craft yourself a nice chair to sit on, and something to go fishing with, and a nice treehouse, and all those kind of things, couldn't you? So it's just practical things. There's no point in doing things like learning a foreign language because there's nobody to talk to. I could learn some boring games or something, but yeah, woodworking.
Well, and then you get to have an annual visit from a mechanic. Do one task. So what task are you gonna just hand over to them?
What task? It would be my annual bike service, I would assume, because I'm so pushed for time that I wouldn't be on the desert island, that I just get even the most mundane of tasks done by my bike mechanic, James Irwin, at the bike garage in Bamford. And so he's like, have you even cleaned your bike before you've handed it over to me this time? I was like, no, sorry. He's like, right, okay, fine. What am I terrible at?
You're taking biscuits.
Oh, yeah, well, I do take him biscuits, yeah, and other things as well. So I take him biscuits and coffees and things. And sometimes, even amazingly, sometimes pay him for the services he provides, which, shock horror. But you know what I'm really, really rubbish at, and I always seem to completely cock up, is a brake bleed. I can't bleed brakes for Toffee. I used to be able to. On Little Hope Minis and stuff like that, I found those really easy. But anything else these days that involves... stick this one at this end and this one at this end. Oh, it just loses me. And I don't know whether that's because I don't have the time or the patience, or it's probably down to my complete mechanical ineptitude. A brake bleed. Because on my island, with its ridge lines and janky little nadgery drops and things, my brakes are going to be taking a bit of a beating, I think.
You're going to be dragging them. You're going to be stopping suddenly.
I'm doing all those things. All those absolutely terrible habits that you shouldn't do. Yeah, I'm doing it all.
Okay, are you going to take one book with you? You get to have a subscription to Singletrack. We've decided. You get that anyway.
It's a given, yeah.
You don't get the Bible. So if you want to take that, you've got to choose it. But you do get a subscription.
Singletrack, not the Bible, Hannah.
But you can choose another book.
The Gospel According to Chips. What might the book be? there's a book I love. I absolutely love for its use of language. And it's quite an old book. It's by a chap called William Golding, quite a famous author. And he wrote a book called The Inheritors. In the 50s, and his use of language in The Inheritors is beautiful. It's about Neanderthal man coming into contact with modern man and their interactions together and how they talk and how they interact and stuff. But for the first I don't know how many chapters, I'll say there are 20 chapters, for the first 19 chapters it's written from the perspective of the Neanderthal, and then for the rest of it it's written from the perspective of modern man. And really recommend people read it because it's beautiful. The descriptions, the simplistic descriptions of the world around the Anthropocene, just, yeah, it's amazing. And I go back to that book every single year and read that again. So I take that one with me. It's a really special book for me, that one. So that, cool. That would
well,
be
hopefully
my...
it can take you to a different world when you're bored of looking at your island and exploring it.
Yeah.
So, and you get to take one album with you as well.
Yeah, didn't know on this one. I could go to the kind of the standard things. I'm thinking about what I've been listening to this morning. And I've had some Gorillaz on this morning, and I've had some Beatles on this morning. I've had some Blur on this morning, who were my favourite band. So I was going, I've just realised I've written it down wrong here. I've written Blue here. I wouldn't be taking Blue with me. No, Blur. There might be a Blur album. But there's one that I always go back to. I go, oh, I just want to stick something on. And that's by Nightmares on Wax, so the Leeds DJ.
Oh, yeah.
And it's called Smoker's Delight. And it came out in about, 90-something, 92, 93 or something. And it's a properly chilled out, really listenable album. So for Desert Island Life, it would be Nightmares on Wax, Smoker's Delight.
Okay.
A wonderful little cool album.
Nice and chilled. Okay, and then a luxury item for a while you're just chilling in this paradise.
A snorkel. I take a snorkel with me.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love snorkeling. So I take my snorkel. Or, and I did think about this one as well. There were no parameters on how big my luxury item could be. So it was a shipping container of dairy milk, red wine and chocolate orange.
That sounds like a shipping container of migraine.
Yeah. so that's the kind of thing. So, yeah. For when
you're not
when
allowed
not...
to use it to escape and or to communicate with the rest of the world, but otherwise...
Yeah,
no, I think that's allowed.
So. That's well, there you go. Then. So I'd be on my desert island, whittling away at my wood, having just ridden down off my ridgeline with my broken bike that doesn't have any brakes anymore, and I could just sip a glass of red wine and have a chocolate orange, listening to Nightmares on Wax.
I'm not sure you should whittle with wine. That sounds dangerous.
Well, no.
We better add a first aid kit to the
first aid kit which should be in there. Yeah, it should have something like. Yeah, that'd be really bad on this. Oh, I've just lost my thumb again. Never mind. So yeah, so that would be it. That's been a little bit cheeky in pushing the boundaries, I think, of what I'm allowed. But what I find with, they say there's no evidence in this, but I like a glass of red wine when I'm doing writing and things like that. I find it quite useful lubricant for the old thinking when it comes to doing the writing and stuff.
Now, you did say that you were lusting after a Cotic, but we didn't do that. You only get to take one bike with you to ride for the rest of the day, rest of your days question. So what, for the last thing, what are you going to take?
What am I going to take? Which bike am I going to take with me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take my current bike, you know, because I'm really happy with my bike, and it's quite an old Cannondale Jekyll. And it just, it just does the job. I got it from Ben, who works for Schwalbe Tyres up here. And I was ready for a nice big bouncy bike that just can take the roughness of the Peak District without me having to think too much about it. And yeah, it's just been ideal for me, which is why I haven't changed it for ages and ages and ages, and just really, really enjoy riding it. It's become, you know, like I was saying about my Rockhopper being that little dog that I take down the pub and stuff like that. It's like that with my Jekyll. So I'd take that with me, I think. And I really missed it when I was talking about that that ride I did in Crete and I borrowed a bike. Can't for the life of me remember what it was. Pretty thing. And we loaded them into the back of a Suzuki Chimney, me and the guide. Drove up all these little roads up in these mountain roads. Into the middle of the White Mountains in Crete, and then started riding. I realised straight away why it's important to have a good relationship and know your bike well. So straight away the brakes were the wrong way round. My word! And we're going down these shingly, limey, limestoney tracks with your brakes flipped. And big drops down here, and a big drop down here, and like. Oregano bushes, then thorn bushes here and everywhere. Yeah, no, I want a bike I'm comfortable with. I have a very good relationship with, and I know very, very well. I know what all the cracks and bangs and creaks and things are. I know where they've come from. I know what the battle scars on them are. So yeah, I would take my Cannondale Jekyll with me.
Okay, well, so you're going to stick with what you know as we send you off into the unknown, off to your desert island. Thank you very much for joining us today.
It's been a joy. Thank you very much.
So there you go. That's the second episode of Desert Island Disc Breaks 4 years. Now, just before we all disappear and head off, what's going on this week? So, Hannah, you're off to Italy on a secret bike lunch. Charlie, what's going on with you this week?
Short week. Friday, I'm heading down south to hang out with some guys called Black Swan, who are international rescue chaps who sort of fly planes into Haiti, and they just got back from the earthquakes on the other side of Europe. We're going to the woods. There's beer involved, and there's a optimism workshop based around gin.
That sounds contradictory. Gin always makes me a bit maudlin.
Yeah, I think we're building a sort of a woodland classroom or something as well. So,
Excellent.
It's a weird weekend.
I cannot top that, so I think we shall leave it right there. So until next week, that's all from me. So goodbye from me.
And goodbye from
me. And
goodbye
from me.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.